All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the American Vindicta Show. Today, I have on with me the guest instructor for the active shooter training that's coming up in June, Mr. Steve Reyes. Steve is a former 18 Delta Special Forces medic. He's had multiple deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, and he was also a SEER instructor. So the man has a lot of knowledge for what we're going to be covering here soon. We're just going to have a basic conversation about things that are going on in the world, and I'm going to be probing Steve's mind about what his responses to certain things that are going on right now would be, and how his advanced knowledge of danger would help us in a actual dangerous time that's coming up in America. So without further ado, Steve, brother, thank you for coming on with us tonight and sharing your vast amount of information. And let's get started, man. I have a question for you. We have now been told that 50 senators have been issued satellite phones because of a pending communication disruption that's going to be supposedly nationwide in 2024 that would interfere with the elections. What do you make of this latest comment, this latest speculation that we're going to have mass communication problems here in America?
Well, first of all, it's good to be with you, Doug. I appreciate our relationship, our friendship, and our collaboration. And I enjoy listening to your show. So hopefully this will be a meaningful exchange between us for whoever happens to be listening. As you probe my brain, I hope the probe doesn't come back empty. So we'll see. So as far as, current events and what in the world is going on with our government, I have my thoughts on it. They would certainly be very unorthodox for a lot of people. Who or what entity is in control of our government and the world governments? I'm inclined to think it's not of earthly origin. So the scheme and the plans that are coming down, I don't know, other than the fact that I'm not surprised. I'm prepared. I'm trying to be prepared as we are trying to prepare people, whoever are willing to participate. We want to, prepare them for future events, probably a lot of things that are going to be chaotic and difficult for a lot of people to manage. So as far as these senators are concerned in this communications, I don't know. Did you get my computer just said recording, stop, recording in progress. So disruptions just like that. Did you get that message, or was that just my computer?
Nope, that happens.
Okay, it just happens. Okay, yep,
that happens from time to time.
But we're back live again. So I don't know, but I simply find this all very interesting. You and I are accustomed to extreme circumstances. I happen to be motivated by it. I know where my assurance comes from and where my security comes from. It comes from my relationship with the creator of heaven and earth. And so whatever is coming, and I do certainly think that we're going to have disruptions in our normal ability to communicate, buy, sell, all those, you know, move from point A to point B. I anticipate disruptions, and this whole deal with the senators is simply an indicator that's coming.
Yeah. Some of the things that I've heard is that we have possible World War III, obviously, that's going to be occurring in Ukraine with Russia, but that the communication disruption, and once again, it's hard to pinpoint a lot of this, but one of the things I've heard is the communication disruption will come internally. So it's kind of a red flag, a false flag. And that, you know, and here's the thing that's interesting is that these 50 senators, all senators were issued these satellite phones. Supposedly only 50 of them took them. But you and I both know that the senators, the congressmen, the vice president, the cabinet, the Pentagon, the joint chiefs, all these high priority people in our government are going to be taken care of and rushed to underground facilities where they'll have the necessary life-sustaining needs to be met for them and their family. But the rest of us heathens, will be stuck out here in ground zero. So let's just go ahead and just put ourselves in ground zero. Let's say the communications of disruption has happened. One of these days, you and I are probably going to either be outside doing something or waking up that day, and our phones are no longer going to work. Now, I'm not going to say the power is going to go out, not at first, but let's say the phones aren't working. You can't send a text message. You can't receive a phone call. Your emails aren't updating. What would be some of the first things popping into your mind that is a indicator that something very bad has happened? And obviously going through the steps of checking to see, hey, is your phone working? Is my neighbor's phone working? And when we all decide nobody's phones are working, what would be one of the next steps that you would be doing for preparedness? I know I'm putting you on the spot right now, but I want to know.
Well, it's kind of an interesting scenario. You know, for phones to just suddenly not be working, you know, so, you know, what am I going to do? If I'm going to get into my vehicle, because I'll be living in the middle of, you know, I don't have any neighbors, you know, in the mountains on 13 acres and, so I would have to drive into town in order to try to determine, okay, what's going on? Is this isolated to my device, you know, or is everybody experiencing this? And what do I observe when I get into town? And, you know, look for who else is everyone experiencing this. So, you know, to me, that's just, if that happens, that's only the beginning of the demise of life as we are accustomed to. And so, you know, more than communication for me, it's just, you know, food, water, shelter, and just home security, you know, being prepared to defend. Because if, you know, if it's just communication that's out, but everything else is functioning and we're able to buy and sell and you know, get food and water, then, you know, that's kind of a weird scenario for it to be so singularly, you know, isolated to just communication.
Well, what's one of the things that we expect to happen before we invade a country? We take out communication, command and control, and then power. So these are some of the things that come across my mind, because obviously that's what we did in Iraq. And, you know, some of the things that I try to put myself in these scenarios. What would I do if I walk around and, you know, my phones aren't working? Probably one of the things that I would do is I would turn my truck on and I would try to get onto the radio stations, try and listen to what the terrestrial radio stations are saying. I have a VHF radio, so I'd probably get on there, try and listen to what NOAA is saying, or any other, you know, anyone who's speaking on ham radio. You know, being veterans, we know that typically we are a little tight-knit group of people. And there are times, and I'll just say this as veterans, that we speak to each other differently than we do a normal civilian at times. So it wouldn't be hard for me to go to law enforcement, or go to, you know, the VFW hall and try and ask anyone that I know of, hey, what are you getting? What are you knowing? Because everybody knows a little bit of information, and I can piece together, you know, an after action report, more or less, of what's going on with all that little bits of information. Most likely your mayor is not going to know anything. You know, most likely nobody will know anything that first 24 hours. And if phones are cut off, this is what's interesting. If phones are cut off, does that mean the towers are down? Does that mean the underground cables are cut? And if so, does that mean internet is down? And does that also mean satellites are down? So if we're losing all three, we are in big trouble, right? So to lose the towers, they have to be destroyed. To lose the underground cables, they have to be dug up and destroyed. And obviously to lose the satellites, they have to be destroyed. Or it has to be some sort of a massive cyber attack, which is what the WEF, the World Economic Forum, has warned last year that 2024 will see multiple attempts of major cyber attacks. And then another one was a guy named DC Drano. He tweeted out on Twitter that it was suspected that this would be some sort of a cyber attack that would take down critical information. You know, obviously, telecommunications is part of our critical infrastructure. So if mainland America loses the ability to communicate with each other, and the government always has little ways to communicate with each other, albeit somewhat limited at times, probably one of the first groups of people that I would try to befriend, that I would try to find, is a ham radio operator. Because as long as the hams are up and going, people are going to be talking. And once again, that first 24, 48 hours, maybe 72 hours, you may not know very much. But growing into that 96-hour, 120-hour mark, you're going to know more information, because then, you know, law enforcement is going to be there. Fire and medical is going to be there. The hospitals are going to be there. National Guard is going to be there. No one has moved, right? So everyone's still going to be in place. People will speak. What I wonder is that, you know, if, and you live a preparedness lifestyle. I live a preparedness lifestyle. That's why we both live on large acres like we do. And we live out in the country like we do. One of the first things that I would want to know is, in my own local environment, what are my neighbors doing? Because I want to, for one thing, I want to find psychosis as quickly as possible with my neighbors, so that I can, you know, say, okay, that's the crazy neighbor is going absolutely crazy. There's always, you're always going to have the one guy who's a dedicated ham radio operator who thinks the sky is falling, every other prophecy or conspiracy. So even that guy may have some sort of information. I would not leave any leaf unturned for information. The other thing that I would do, and I'm sure you could probably tag onto this, is that I would enhance my home security, right? If telecommunications are down, then that's something that's going on in a nationwide attack. Well, there's probably a threat actor, most likely a external threat, that is attacking our infrastructure. And that's typically a, you know, prepositioning for war, for an invasion, something that we've all said is coming eventually here in America. We will eventually be invaded. How do we respond? So now that we're there, enhancing your home security, what does that sound like in your mind? What would your day to night schedule of trying to better enhance your home security look like for the average person?
Yeah, I guess, you know, for the average person who's in a community, a neighborhood, and they, you know, have neighbors all around them, then, you know, that's what I'm exiting. You know, I have a house in a neighborhood, but I don't want to be there in this circumstance, because home security becomes much more difficult. But it's where most people are, so they need to be, you know, okay, so what are they going to do? You know, for the average individual, the normal individual who's, you know, surrounded by neighbors, number one, hopefully they have a little network. They have, you know, and if they don't have one, they should be trying to develop one. If I'm going to be in a neighborhood and I've got to deal with neighbors, and I want to know them, and I want to know who I'm going to be able to trust and to collaborate with. You know, it's a difficult environment to be in if you've got to be taking care of security for yourself and your family and your home and your property, and you don't know, and you're not connected to the people around you. So I would be developing, you know, some network of people, because you may not be able to get around. You might not be able to be, you know, moving about in your vehicle. And so you want to be able to network with those around you. So as far as communication is concerned, especially if I was in a neighborhood, walkie talkies would be very, I would think, an asset to have, because, you know, they got that 5 mile radius or whatever radius happens to be. Well, that covers a whole lot of neighbors that you can be communicating with and gathering situational awareness about what's happening around them, what's coming towards you. So developing networks would be one of the things, and then equipping those individuals with the ability to communicate and to collaborate together. So that's really a very proactive thing that most people can be doing right now. If you're in the country like you and I are, for me, I'm just using that, you know, look, listen, smell, what's going on, you know, using my senses to alert me, to gain situational awareness to what is happening. And if I can use my vehicle, I'm going to have to go travel, to find out, you know, to gather more information, you know. So yeah, that's,
I want to put this into people's minds. If the power's still on, but your capability of communicating anybody is not present, then your ability to call EMS or law enforcement most likely, I would guess, is also not accessible. So for large communities like suburbs, one of the things that I would suggest is to canvas your suburb, have a little town meeting, a suburb meeting. I mean, you might as well consider your suburb to be your town at that point. That is your territory. You have one way in, one way out, most likely. And so, you know, I would be trying to find out who is there, what skills people have, you know, like yourself, who has knowledge of medicine, who has knowledge of, the basic functionings of electricity and carpentry in case we need to jerry-rig something, we need to do some redneck engineering and create something. You know, these are some of the things where a larger community has an advantage, where you and I, thankfully I have a crazy, how would you say this gently? I have one of those neighbors I call him my redneck MacGyver. He can literally do almost anything with everything. So, you know, for me, he is what I would call a tactical asset. And I want that guy to live. And I want that guy to like me. Right. Luckily enough, we're friends and we're neighbors and we're sharing chickens and eggs all the time back and forth. So that's our little, you know, commodity that we've created with one another. You know, most likely also, if your cell phone's not working, then the internet's not working. Well, you know what else isn't going to work? Being able to use your credit card, being able to use, you know, your phone apps and watch apps on paying stuff. You're going to be stuck with cash, which apparently they're trying to get rid of, and coinage or bartering. So, you know, this will be another thing that you'll be having to consider. How do I pay for commodities? And how do I also sell commodities that I have? Here's one thing for us to also consider is that people will quickly lose tempers, lose their cool during extreme heightened stress events. So you're going to have to deal with those people. And this is my suggestion. It's probably not the most accurate or gentle suggestion, but if you're trying to have a little community to be prepared and self-sufficient and, you know, just try to keep the normal everyday life going, and you have that one or two guys who are hotheads, the town drunks that are always causing problems, that always have an opinion about everything, you may have to have a contingency plan of how to handle those people, because those people can incite riots. Those people will be spreading rumors and starting problems. And when, you know, the nation is potentially under attack, we got enough problems already. So you'll have to have contingencies for the people around you. I know a friend of mine, he worked for ATF. And I asked him, you know, if we ever got hit with an EMP, what's the first thing you would do? He's like, first thing I would do, I'm going to go visit all my neighbors. I'm like, in what way? He said, well, I know I got the meth heads down the road here. I'm going to go disarm them. And I know I got these people over here. I'm going to go and warn them not to be, you know, doing this and doing that. And I was like, well, that's probably not the best idea to immediately throw yourself out there like that. Right. I understand it sounds cool and tough. But like you, I'm very much the gray man. I don't want to be remembered. And when you're my size, it's hard to just kind of blend into crowds. But, you know, I don't want people to see anything about me and say, that guy looks important. That guy, you know, we need that guy. We need to talk to that guy. We need to bother that guy, or that guy's going to be a problem. I don't want to be any of those things. I just want to be a ghost in the wind. Yeah. You know, so what's your idea of how you would deal with your neighbors then?
And, you know, I mean, in my mind, it needs to happen before the fact. Before the fact, you need to know who's like-minded, you know, who thinks like you think, and as you said, what are people's skill sets? Who has what skill set? I mean, so like the individual that you just mentioned, if I'm going to be concerned about a certain certain neighbors whom I might consider a threat, and in a situation where normality no longer exists and people are stressed out because they're not able to function normally, I want to know who my battle buddies are, and actually, from a security standpoint, that's probably one of my biggest concerns. I do, like you, I am the gray man. I like to be self-sufficient, don't like to depend on other people, not necessarily trying to be recognized or noticed, but I do want to know, certainly would want to know my neighbors and, be a friend, be a friend to those who are, willing to accept that. I think people need to be creating networks. I don't know how abnormal you and I are. I don't know if people are just totally clueless. I imagine most of your listeners have that situational awareness that normality, the normal life existence, is very precarious right now. The government we are heading in a direction where we're going to see, I think, in the very near future, experiencing the things that we're talking about, some extreme circumstances which are going to disrupt life and cause people to react in extreme fashions. People who will want to capitalize on the disruption in order to, to loot, steal, acts of violence. And in a neighborhood is a place where, you don't have good security. People are on top of you. People are passing in front of your house. You don't know them. So you really do need to know who you can trust. And I would be very proactive. Like you said, number one, first get to know people. I mean, hard to call, a town, little town neighborhood meeting. But whatever, go to whatever community functions exist in your neighborhood, 4th of July parades, the public, the local swimming pool, whatever, get to know your neighbors. Start walking, go for walks. It's going to be healthy, but you can also be observing, those around you, the houses around you, and get to know these people and find out who's on your side and who you can trust, and build some rapport there, and find out what skill sets everybody has. That's not the norm. Most people don't know their neighbors, and you're gonna have to depend on more than just yourself, in a neighborhood.
And I think depending on where you live at, that is going to be highly advisable. Like if I lived in the Northwest, I'd hate to say Portland and Seattle because I was there so much, but if I lived in any type of suburb in the Portland, Seattle area, I would probably go on my little tactical reconnaissance walk, walking the dog. But what I'm really doing is I'm looking for bumper stickers. I'm looking for flags. I'm looking for decals, and I'm trying to find out what you support, if you support anything. And then I'll know when I see rainbow flags and little, you know, Antifa markers and BLM this, and, you know, I'll know who you are, and I'll put that in my mind. And then when I start seeing, you know, thin blue line and you know, stuff that's supporting the military or, you know, symbols with, you know, Christianity on it, I'll put that in my mind. Okay, these people are here. Those people are there. And then I can put like a little tally up who outweighs the other. Okay. So then you'll know if it breaks bad in your area, if you're outnumbered or if you got more on your side. And just because they may have some of the same things that I just mentioned, a thin blue line or a veteran or, you know, a Christian flag up, doesn't mean they're going to be on your side immediately. You know, I mean, Christians are probably some of the worst people out there at trying to explain their theology or trying to accept another Christian's theology. I mean, we see it in the comment section all the time. My Lord, people chew each other up if you're Presbyterian or Catholic or Pentecostal or you name it. Don't even throw in flat earth. I'll go ahead and say that because someone's going to just lose their mind now. As I said, flat earth, which is fake. You know, I mean, people already are so divided that when it gets really, really bad, there'll be a point in time where they're going to go through a burnout. So there'll be a point in time where, you know, they're going to have their political priorities and they're going to view their world and their neighbors through that. And then after about a week or two and things are getting really bad, they're going to start putting some of those priorities to the side for its safety and security and reassurance of having a neighbor to be there to watch their six. Because the average person does not think like that because they've never lived like that. But Americans better start thinking like that. We are prompting World War III with two nations right now that have like 20 other nations backing them. And oh, not to mention, at least half of our Congress is not on America's side, which that still blows my mind, right? So things aren't in the favor for we the people. And when things break bad in America, if you're not self-reliant, if you don't have that food stocked up, extra batteries, the walkie-talkie radios, if you don't own a gun and extra ammunition, hopefully you got training on it. We do offer that in case you want it. Hopefully you have medical stuff, and we do offer that for that type of training. Because if you don't have anyone to rely upon, then you have to rely upon you. And if you're nothing but, you know, 150 pounds of chewed up bubble gum, well, my friend, the world is going to spit you out. And man, you've been in places where I've been. People are not kind to each other in other nations, especially when it gets really ugly, really bad. You know, I've walked past places where you have starving kids and people just walk right by them, ignore them. You know, if that's you and people are walking right by you and ignoring you, how are you going to feed yourself? Did you ever think maybe Doritos wasn't the best way to prepare? You know, I mean, I understand that we have priorities and we have bills and we want to go on vacation. But if you don't have like at least 1 month worth of food, you know what you've created? You've created a liability. And in a survival situation, especially, you know, with guys like me and Steve, the one thing we never want to be is a liability, because liabilities are the strings that get cut, right? You want to be an asset. If you're the guy who can fix anything, you're an asset. If you're the lady who's the green thumb gardener, you are an asset, right? If you know animal husbandry, you're an asset. If you can sew clothes together that have been ripped up, you're an asset. Right. Even the average person, I've had, you know, the little old ladies who've contacted me and, oh, I'm 70 years old and I live in a high rise apartment and all I do is bake cookies. Hey, lady, if you can bring cheer to people and you can lift someone's moods up and not add stress, you're an asset. But to be that person who is wholly reliant upon alcohol drugs, pornography, if you're that person who is of the criminal mindset, or, you know, you're of the leftist mindset, and I'll say that almost every leftist is a liability right now. And I have no idea why people choose to live this way, but they have lost their minds. And in my little mindset, anyone who believes the Democratic lie is a liability. That is a security risk in my mind. You know, what say you, Steve?
I mean, the thing that's going through my mind is, I think when, you know, I'm fully anticipating when things break down, they're going to break down hard and fast. And I don't know if there's, I wouldn't want to be in a neighborhood unless I knew my neighbors and I knew that I had a network that was trustworthy. So if I live in a neighborhood and I don't have that network, then you're really vulnerable. I mean, that the old lady, I mean, if I'm in a city, forget it. I mean, there's no way there's no way I would live in a city. If I lived in a city, I would have a place to go to. I would not stay in the city. When anything aberrant went down, okay, cell phones aren't working, I would be thinking, you know, I mean, that even if it's just isolated to all communication is down, well, that's only an indicator that much worse is coming. Can't imagine why that would happen in isolation, but nonetheless, I would be anticipating much worse happening, and therefore I need to have, if I cannot be secure where I live because I have a security network in place, then I want to go to a place where I can be secure. I need, you know, some alternate, you know, a safe house, a safe place to go. And that's, you know, whether you buy, you know, an acre of land out in the country somewhere that call, you know, you get super cheap because it's just empty land, but you go ahead and you put a Sealand container on that property because it's unrestricted land. Of course, I'm going to buy unrestricted land, and I'll, you know, maybe I want to have a camper, you know, buy a $1,500 camper, Sealand container, all the better. And, you know, one for storage, one for, you know, converting into a living space. But it's going to take that kind of, it's going to take that kind of foresight for what's coming down, and it's coming down, you know, I believe. So, I mean, I've always had property. I've had land. I've never had a lot of money, you know, enlisted guy in the military, didn't make much money, sole source of income for my family. And yet, you know, I had property that I could go to. And, you know, we are leaving our neighborhood, you know, and going to our property because I don't think a neighborhood is a safe place to be. But you can live in your neighborhood, but you need a place to go if you don't know your neighbors. If you don't know that you're going to be secure, and if you live in a nice neighborhood, you definitely need a place to go because all the bad characters are coming to your neighborhood, you know, to loot and, you know, take what is yours. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be isolated and in an individual in that respect. So so that's, yeah, I people need to plan. They need to be prepared. If you don't have a piece of property, you got time. You got time to prepare to create a network in your neighborhood. So, but like you just said, be an asset. Develop some skills. If you don't have survival skills, it doesn't take long. You know, the military, at least the Army adage is see one, do one, teach one. Okay, so come see it. Come see it happen. Come learn. Come to a class and get some hands-on training. See it. Do it. Ours is going to, our training is you see it and you do it. And then go back to your neighborhood and teach it. You know, it's crawl, walk, run. And so start crawling.
Yeah, I think I'd bring up two things now. One thing I want to talk about is, and this is just where my mind goes, if communication goes down, power's going next. That's typically how those two things go. So when you're talking about bugging out, and remind me, I'll also talk about a story from South Africa. When you talk about bugging out, understand this, that if for the first couple of days communication's not going on and you can't make payments, and you're still going to have things like traffic movement, you're still going to have traffic accidents. Well, if that system isn't running correctly and the wreckers aren't going out and removing anything because they're not getting paid, right? What happens to the highways and the interstates? How bad does that traffic jam look? Because you're going to have a lot of people of a lot of mindset to get out of the city, and they're all going to probably flee once they start seeing everyone else flee. That's how people move, right? So you need to have that contingency. Do I have a map of my area? Do I know how to get out of my area through all the back roads without hitting the interstate, without hitting the highway? Because most likely as well, that's also where the piratism, which happens all around the world, even here in America, that's where that's going to occur. But don't think it won't also occur on the farm to market roads. So, with mobilization and bugging out, you got to have prepared items already. All right. You got to have prepared items already. You have at least had to have planned and practiced the plan of bugging out, which means you also have to have that location to go to. Here's one thing. If you don't have a location to go to because you cannot buy anything, one of the things that I would put on my landmark is a national park. National parks are going to have bathrooms. They're going to have water well hookups. And maybe people won't be thinking about that. But if everything else has gone to shit, I'm going to the national park if I don't have a place to go. Right. I have places that I could go. I have three or four different locations that I would go to. But I have to plan out in my mind, how severe is it? How severe is trying to go through Fort Worth and Dallas or some of the other larger cities? And then do I decide, do I want to take the best practical approach and go to the bug out location that's the furthest away? Or do I want to stay put? Or do I want to go to the bug out location that's closest to me that might not be the most adequate, but it gets me out of direct harm's way, right? So here's a story about South Africa. Good friend of mine from South Africa, he told me a story about his neighborhood. And this happened, I want to say at least 4 years ago. And sitting in his neighborhood, they were getting attacked quite frequently a month by the Afrikaners, however they say it. And it turned into a black versus white thing in South Africa. And so you had, like white settlements, white suburbs, I guess you could say, and they were being attacked by the Africans. And for whatever political racist reason, I really don't care. What I care about is the crime and action of violence that's happening. So they ended up having to create their own internal security. So that means they had to do their own civilian watch. They did have external security that was at the gate. That was an armed guard. But this guy, if I'm correct, they killed him. All right. And their suburb got attacked by if I'm correct, it was at least more than 30 people. They used small arms and also tools like machetes and hammers. So I want you to consider this. And this was spooky when he told me this. I had gotten my friend actually into 3-gun shooting. And so he had bought himself a really fancy Benelli shotgun. Guy's good with it too. He's doing 3-gun matches now, so good on him. And he told me that he walked outside. It's nighttime, right? So he walks outside, he looks down the road, and here's his car. He looks down the road, and he sees just this huge group of people just ransacking, going from house to house, breaking into cars. And then all of a sudden, there's this guy that appears in his front yard. And he has like a hammer, like a claw hammer or a machete, is one of those tools. And the guy, my friend, takes his shotgun and points it at this guy and says, you know, get off my lawn or I'm going to kill you. Guy didn't move, just sat there. And then he started to approach him. So here's some of the things that we're going to teach you at this training, because this freaked my buddy out really bad. He's like, I don't know what to do. I don't want to kill the guy. You know, who really wants to kill people, right? So I said, I get that. But this is where training comes in. Bad people will know to call your bluff, because the average bad person knows that the average good person doesn't want to kill anybody. So they will push that boundary as far as they can go, which means they'll come right to your doorstep, standing in front of you in that shotgun, and most likely will still demobilize you because of hesitation. In law enforcement, we teach that hesitation is what kills most officers, and sadly, that's true. So with the training that we're going to be doing, we're going to be putting you in scenarios where you are going to have to think your way through a problem, which is what you're not going to get on a flat range shooting at target paper, all right? That's the unique thing about our training. And from there, you can learn many different skills, not just de-escalation, but how to actually deal with somebody if they start to cooperate. You know, I have seen this done before, Steve, where there's a problem between two people and the one guy that's armed, who's that guy, his only solution is to pull his gun out and point his gun at somebody and say, stop doing what you're doing, or I'm going to shoot, because he doesn't know de-escalation. He doesn't know training himself. He's scared. He's anxious, but he's got a gun. He's going to use it. Well, that's not always the most, you know, viable situation to be put in. That's not always the most correct response, especially if, and you got to remember, if this communication goes down for just a couple days and it comes back on and everything's hunky-dory and you killed somebody in between A and Z, you are going to be criminally liable. You know, just because the power goes out for a day or two and it freaks everybody out and then it comes back on, what do you do after that? You know, these are things that I challenge a lot of, quote, preppers, and they don't have good answers for me because they don't think past that. They just think, I've seen Doomsday Prepper on Discovery Channel. I've watched every episode. And if anything happens that hits my Doomsday list, I'm going to my bug out location, my bunker, and I'm going to stay there until Jesus comes back. Like that's not intelligent. Yeah, that's not how this is going to happen, because people are going to come visit you. People will find you. And eventually you'll have to go outside and you'll have to communicate with people. Eventually, if you don't know how to do that, you're going to be in a world of hurt, because criminals know how to communicate. They know how to get belt buckle close to you. So let me put you in this situation, Steve. And I know I always do this to you. You're driving home. You're in your mountain property. You're driving back home. Comms are down. Electricity's down. And you have a bunch of guys sitting on the road with their guns, all right, stopping your movement, your freedom of travel in your vehicle. What would be some of the things that you would be doing immediately?
Okay, so I'm on my way home and it's a roadblock.
Yep.
They're blocking the road.
Yep.
I'm going to hope. I mean, my plan would be, you know, I observe it. I stop, you know, maybe I stop and just continue to observe and try to assess, you know, what's going on. I mean, if I'm aware, if communication is down, if we're already in the beginning of, you know, some chaotic circumstance, you know, then I'm going to assess that pretty, you know, differently that, okay, this is probably not going to go well. I probably am not going to be able to negotiate my way through here. If chaos is already stopping, these people are probably not, they're not constrained. They have little constraint. Therefore, they're willing to do whatever they need to do to achieve their objective. They're not really worried about what's going to happen to them if they take a destructive course of action, something that's going to be destructive to me, to my property, whatever. So I would stop and observe.
Let me evolve the situation.
If I have an alternate route, I'm going to turn around and go access my property a different way.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have an alternate route and I need to get, and I'm going home, then I'm going to go ahead and approach them, but then I'll be in a state of readiness, situational awareness that, okay, you know, lower my window a little bit to communicate to them, but I'm ready to throw it in. If they have the road blocked and I can't just plow through it, you know, I need to be ready to go in reverse. And then if I got to, you know, hump it to my house, you know, go park my car and go off road to my property, then I'll do that. But so I'm either, you know, if I approach them and I can tell they are bent on violence and I am not going to be able to, you know, communicate my way through this, then I'm going to be, I mean, for me personally, you know, I'm going to be prepared to just kind of ram through it and get, you know, get to where I'm going. 'Cause it's either I hurt them or they're going to hurt me. And so what were you going to, you were going to add to it. You're going to develop.
Yeah. Let's evolve this situation. And once again, this is scenario based training, right? This type of stuff Steve's done and I've done. Kind of a Kim's game almost, I guess you could say. We're going to evolve the situation. Say you pulled up to this vehicle checkpoint, this roadblock, and you notice that at least, let's say there's four guys, at least two out of the four are neighbors that you quasi know, you've spoken to, and they realize who you are, you realize who they are. And so that kind of tampers things down, all right? You approach calmly, you were confident, you didn't have your gun hanging out your window. Even if all these guys were armed, you would want to still approach cautiously. Maybe you wouldn't want to approach at all. Maybe you would just want to turn around. But in this case, you pulled up, you recognized them, they recognized you, guns were all pointed at the deck now. What would be some of the information you would be asking them?
Okay, guys, you know, what's going on? why? See, if I don't know what's going on, if this is just kind of out of the blue, what, you know, why are they doing this? There's, you know, some catastrophic event has not happened, then okay, I need to gain situational awareness. I need to know who are they, what do they want, and what are they willing to do to get what they want. So if I know who some of them are, then I need to find out, okay, what do you guys want? You know, why do you have this roadblock? And so you give the appearance of being cooperative and non-threatening. You don't want to be threatening. You don't want to escalate the situation. You want to be calm. So you be pleasant, ask them, hey, what's going on? You know, what's happening? Is everything okay? And just see what the exchange is. And then the scenario needs to develop. I mean, you've got to see, you know, what is their response. And, you know, if you, you know, and you kind of need to observe who is who in that crowd, who's in charge, what is, you know, what's their demeanor, who's, you know, who's unpredictable. But essentially you need to know who they are, what do they want, and then what are they willing to do to get what they want. So
this is this is a situation that I've been asked a few times, for people who live in various different types of properties, especially suburbs. I've been contacted by a few people who live in suburbs, and they said, you know, we would be setting up vehicle checkpoints, and anyone who would come into the suburb, or, you know, the ranch estate that they live in, they'd be checking driver's license to make sure that they are actually there and they are who they say they are and going where they say they're going. And you have to consider that in certain ways, this is both proactive and reactive. It's proactive to think like this because if communication is down for a period of days, especially if the power is out, what's one of the first things that's going to be happening? Criminality is going to spike. Home invasion is going to spike. Theft is going to spike, right? Violence is going to shoot through the roof. And if you want to have situational awareness and security, you set up a vehicle checkpoint and you be friendly, right? You can have your guns out. You always have to be aware, though, that this is a 24/7 job and whoever is standing guard has to be reliable. They can't be falling asleep. They can't be Joe Blow with a shotgun, because you don't want a hothead out there pointing his gun at every single person, because, hey, man, people sometimes don't like each other. You never know if it may be the two neighbors who don't like each other. One's in the car and one has the gun saying, who are you and where are you going from? Like, you know who I am, Steve. Leave me alone. Let me get to my house. You know, I won't kick your dog this time. But these incidents will occur. People will think like that. And if you're trying to bug out to your bug out location, you may come through one of these checkpoints where you may be up there in the mountains where Steve is, and it could be a bunch of good old boys who's decided, you know, we're not letting any city slickers coming through here. We don't want anyone robbing the place. So we know everybody on the mountain. And if you ain't on the mountain, you ain't coming in. You're going to face that, especially if you're in a very off-grid like situation. These are scenarios that people need to start playing around with in their minds. How would I respond? I get too many people who ask me, Doug, what type of flashlight do I need, and backpack and shoes and guns? And look, that is irrelevant. You should have that already. You should know what to do with all that. What you need to start learning how to do is how to deal with people. in stressful situations and keeping your cool. Because that's how everything implodes, is when people don't know what the hell they're doing. And then you always have that one guy who just has to be in charge, but should never be given any type of supervisory position. And you have to be able to make bygones with people. You're going to have instances where, you know, you're going to have to compromise a little bit for peace and safety. You're going to have to compromise. I'm going to have to go through this rigmarole standing post with Steve, who's the most annoying guy I've ever met in my life. But we're going to get through it. It's just, you know, 12 hours, right? So these are things I think that the regular civilian has a very big disadvantage at. Because in the military, we had to deal with that. You know, we had to stand guard with people that we either like or don't like. We've had to deal with stressful situations, the surprise inspections, the surprise training event where, you know, the gunny decides on today's vehicle checkpoint at 2:30 in the morning, he's going to blast his Humvee right through and see what you do, right? You get tested like that all the time and you're being evaluated. Civilians are never tested. They're never evaluated. So when they're thrusted into this situation, they're at the biggest disadvantage. So that's one of the things I would tell people, is that if you do have your bug out group, you need to just, you can put it on a whiteboard. All right. This is the scenario. This is what's going on. And say, Steve, you're up. What would you do if this happened? Okay. But you have to challenge yourself. And you have to be honest. And that doesn't mean you pick on your buddy because he made the wrong decision. We're here to help each other, right? If you're safe and I'm safe and, you know, we're all prospering, then we're good to go. But if we start, you know, going after each other, well, then you create animosity. In a stressful time, we need the least amount of that as possible. Steve, we got about 5 minutes left. Spiritually, what's going on in America is very disturbing. And you and I were talking about, you know, the need to have physical preparedness, but the even greater need to have spiritual preparedness. And I just want to hear your thoughts on it. Where do you think spiritual preparedness, what do you think that means to you? And how, you know, what's your advice for the person who's struggling right now? You know, spiritually, what should they be doing to help better themselves?
You know, actually, that's incredibly wise, and it's the foundation. It's the most relevant thing from my perspective to preparedness, to being prepared, is that the security of knowing where your hope lies, where your strength lies. So for me, I mean, it is my, you know, it's my foundation that, I can trust God to guide me. So for me, it's Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust God with your whole heart. Lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge him in all your ways, and he will direct your paths. So as we are talking about all of these challenging circumstances, I mean, not just the challenge of what the world is going to throw at us, but how am I to react to it? What is my reaction going to be? What knowledge do I bring to that, you know, life circumstance, you know, of whatever chaos is coming from the world? Peace comes from knowing that I can trust God, and he's going to guide me and direct me. And so it is having that relationship, having that personal relationship that is a daily practice. So in the same way that we want to be prepared and, you know, prepared for whatever adversity, you know, having food, water, shelter, and security, just knowing that ultimately your greatest security and your greatest hope is by walking daily close to God. So spending time with God every day, because my thought has always been, okay, just like our earthly relationship, if I am spending time with my dad, my physical dad, every day, and if my dad has the, you know, the ability, you know, especially if I'm a little child and my dad can protect me and my dad can give me wisdom and my dad can tell me what I need to know to get through whatever circumstance, and my dad loves me, is there any chance that I'm going to miss that critical information that my dad wants to impart to me? If I'm spending time with him every day and I am saying, Dad, teach me, show me what I need to do, you know, and then if you do spend that time daily, then God is going to direct you. He's going to communicate to you what you need in order to be successful and to survive. So, you know, for me, that is the most critical piece, is walk close to your God, your Heavenly Father, to know what His will is, and to know when He's directing you in a certain direction. And it's a promise. Trust Him with your whole heart. We don't have to lean on our own understanding. So we don't have to have all the answers. God will direct our paths. Acknowledge Him in all your ways, you know, and He's going to guide us. So, you know, even to me, it's, you know, people listening to this program. Okay, God is speaking to you. For whatever reason, you tuned in, God is speaking to you. You know, stay in tune to Him, and He will reveal what it is, you know, that you're to take away from this communication. You know, more from Doug, I feel very inadequate in this, you know, scenario. This, you are strong. This is not my strength. You know, communicating off the cuff, just spontaneously like this is not necessarily my gift, but God nonetheless can use us. You need to be seeking God with your whole heart, trusting Him with your whole heart, and He will guide, you know, your steps and direct your paths. So, you know, to me, and same, we're all in the same boat. The people listening are in the same boat that you and I are, because we need to know, God, what is it I need to do to be prepared? Because I don't know what's coming down. I can speculate, but I don't know, and I don't know how it's going to come down. I don't know who I'm going to have to confront in the process. As you were just sharing what you just shared, and hopefully I can spit this out quickly to not go over the 5 minutes. But people, one really valuable tool is how to react to confrontation. It doesn't have to be violent or negative confrontation, you know, but how do you respond when somebody asks you a question? What information should you give them? How much information is enough? How much, you know, what information is too much? So there are skills, and there are skills that we plan on sharing in the training in June. You know, some of that is just the ability to communicate when you're confronted by somebody and they're saying, what are you doing here? Where are you going? Okay, well, what's the wisest information? How much information should you give them? You need to actually gain situational awareness pretty quickly to determine, you know, how should I respond? And there are techniques to responding, you know, maybe you want to be ambiguous. Maybe you want to be misleading. Maybe you just want to give them a little bit of the truth. You know, you don't want to just lay it all out there. So, you know, I think it's important to practice being prepared to deal with people challenging you. Hey, you know, who are you? Why are you here? You know, what do you believe? You know, you know, be prepared. You know, how do you deal with that circumstance? You know, but the most critical piece is be securely in a secure relationship with God so that you can have peace in that situation and you will have the Holy Spirit guiding you.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, I think salvation in Jesus is the first step to the survival mindset. It should be. It should be the foundation. The cornerstone of your survival mindset should be salvation in Christ first. And then we can get on to all the night vision and thermals and, you know, machine guns and cool toys afterwards. But you need to be rooted in the Bible first. And, you know, I just want to read real quick. This is my daily devotional from Pastor David Wilkerson. At the very end, for March 23rd, at the very end of it, it says, God has determined to accomplish his goal on earth through men and women with weaknesses. As it is written of Abraham, who had many weaknesses but had faith. He believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. That's Romans 4:3. So, you know, have faith with what you're doing, and have faith with God. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you went and got dunked in a tank at your Baptist church, and I'm, you know, everything's fine now, I'll go to heaven. You need to continue that faith, as Steve was saying. You need to continue that relationship with the Father all the time. I found myself to be speaking to God as much as possible now. My Father has now passed on, and so my Heavenly Father is now my guiding spirit, right? That's where I have to go to for, you know, all my questions at this point. And I realize with the more that is happening around the world, the more my faith needs to be stronger. And I find sometimes my faith is inadequate. A lot of times it's the enemy, right? The enemy telling you that you're inadequate, your connection with God is not strong. But if you're hitting your knees every night and you are living a repenter's life, if your religion is, you know, giving to the poor and the sick and the widows and taking care of people, as Jesus said, you're doing the right things, and God will put you with the right people and lead you to the right groups. Some people, Steve, are not going to be prepared as they wish. And for that, they will have to rely on faith, but they have to hear God. And that means you need to hear God. You need to speak to God. You need to speak to God probably a little bit more than you watch YouTube all day or Facebook or Twitter. So that means you have to cut out a few things in your life, and you need to open up that communication line to the heavenlies. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got. Steve, thank you so much for being on with me, brother. I look forward to seeing you June 23rd. We will have the active shooter reaction an awareness course, and the tactical combat casualty care course. This course is going to be primarily geared around a grid down situation, which is, from what the experts in our country are telling us, it's going to eventually happen, maybe soon. So if God puts it on your heart, if you do get any stirrings from this type of podcast and what we're talking about with the training and preparedness mindset, and you do feel like coming to the training, please contact readymaderesources.com, and you can sign up online, or you can give Ready Made Resources a call, and you can sign up via the phone. Steve, brother, thank you very much for your words of wisdom. And And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for watching. My name is Doug Thornton. This is Steve Reyes. This is American Vindicta. Stay frosty. The enemy's out there. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.